This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
President Yahya Jammeh is virtually running a ghost government. Almost all the ministers are resigning. Some have absconded to neighboring Senegal.
That's Pandarian Bai, managing editor and founder of the online Freedom newspaper. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, doctors and aid organizations in Zimbabwe call on the government to improve the country's water and sanitation as part of efforts to contain an outbreak of typhoid. Four people are dead and nearly 180 are missing and presumed dead after a migrant ship capsizes on the Mediterranean Sea on Saturday. And Burundi's opposition in exile says the ongoing peace dialogue is failing. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh has declared a state of emergency as he continues to defy calls to step down when his term ends on Thursday. Jammeh went on state television this evening to make the announcement. His address follows mass resignations by government ministers over the past 2 days and reports that West African troops could intervene if he remains in power. Jammeh wants to legally challenge the December 1st election results in which opposition leader Adama Barrow was declared the winner. However, Gambia Supreme Court probably won't convene until May at the earliest. Barrow is currently in Dakar, Senegal. Among those following developments is Pandarian Bai, founder and managing editor of the online Freedom newspaper. He spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about Jammeh declaring a state of emergency in the Gambia this evening.
President Yahya Jammeh has just declared a state of emergency in the Gambia. The state of emergency has been premised on the following reasons. Mr. Jammeh is arguing that in order to maintain law and order, the status quo should remain in the Gambia. He said he doesn't want to see a power vacuum in the Gambia. He wants his election petition to be heard by the Supreme Court. As such, he's not going to allow President-elect Adama Barrow to be inaugurated on Thursday, the 19th of January.
So what does that mean now? Does that mean he is ready to use the military to prevent any inauguration from taking place?
Absolutely, absolutely. He said throughout the state of emergency, civil liberties will be respected. He called on the security forces to defend Gambia's territorial integrity, to defend Gambia's sovereignty. He doesn't want to see any external invasion coming from ECOWAS or Senegal. Henceforth, Jammeh is saying that the military should make sure that peace and order prevails in the Gambia.
Now, we've seen a mass resignation of government ministers over the past 2 days. And when we last spoke, you said the whereabouts of the justice minister were unknown. Have you heard anything more about that?
Information is not forthcoming. Her whereabouts remains a big question mark right now. Some are saying that she's in Senegal. Some are saying that she's in hiding. But as we speak, there is no definitive information regarding her exact whereabouts.
Now, earlier we spoke about the possibility of Senegalese troops intervening in the Gambia if Jammeh did not step down on Thursday. And you explained that the Senegalese people and the Gambian people have a lot in common, even multiple languages. If Senegalese troops entered the Gambia and faced Gambian military, it almost sounds like it would be brother against brother.
Absolutely, absolutely, Joe. Culturally, we are intertwined. Many of the languages spoken in the Gambia are usually spoken in Senegal. So having this kind of showdown, it will cause some problems. People are increasingly concerned about the security ramifications associated with the military intervention. But on the other hand, ECOWAS and Senegal, they're saying that Jammeh lost the mandate of the Gambian people. From the 19th, he will cease to be the president of the Gambia. So it is going to be an interesting showdown, but sources on the ground are saying that the military might likely be divided. there is what they call ethnic discrimination in Gambia's military. Jame came from the minority tribe called the Jolas. The Jolas constitute the lowest population in the Gambia, but over the years he was able to use the other ethnic groups to support him. Now that the leader who is supposed to take over, Adama Barrow, comes from the Fulani and Mandinka tribe, there is going to be some form of like rebellion within the army. We're hoping that by tomorrow midnight, there will be some movements in the country. We just received reports that Senegal might likely launch an attack on Wednesday night to install Adama Barrow as President-elect of the Gambia on Thursday.
That's Pandarian Bai, managing editor and founder of the online Freedom newspaper. He spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. In Zimbabwe, doctors and aid organizations have called on the government to improve the country's water and sanitation to help contain an outbreak of typhoid. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
Authorities have started dismantling vendors' malls as part of efforts to contain the outbreak that has struck more than 200 people in the capital Harare, killing two, and has been detected in other parts of Zimbabwe. Vendors say authorities must ensure citizens have adequate clean water and sanitation. Evans Masitara is the Secretary General of the group Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. Masitara told journalists in Harare that President Robert Mugabe's government has to do more to contain the outbreak.
We really don't want to mix issues here. Typhoid is being driven mainly by this water and sewage problem, not by the meat vendors. The meat vendors, definitely it's a health problem, but it's not the driver of typhoid. It's an issue which needs to be addressed, but for now I think the priority should be on water and sewage systems and refuse collection.
Last week, the doctors' group called on the government to release funds to ensure medicines imports are not delayed. On Tuesday, the doctors said their call had not been answered positively. Health Minister David Parirenyatwa on Tuesday visited Mbare Township, the epicenter of the typhoid outbreak, and blamed the city of Harare for failing to ensure hygienic conditions.
We will not be able to get rid of typhoid or cholera or diarrheal diseases as long as we have conditions like these ones. Even if I said every hospital in this country stop treating anything else except typhoid or cholera, we'll still not have a solution. The solution is making sure that we've got hygienic conditions in this country, particularly here in Harare. The filth that is there, the worms that are breeding on top and under the cabbages that are being sold, and the sewage that is flowing is just a shocking, a deplorable state. As long as we don't clean this, you'll not get rid of typhoid.
In 2008-2009, a cholera outbreak killed more than 4,000 people in Zimbabwe. The waterborne bacterial disease can be treated with antibiotics, but still kills more than 220,000 people worldwide each year. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Four people are dead and nearly 180 are missing and presumed dead after a migrant ship capsized on the Mediterranean Sea on Saturday. The news was released today by the International Organization for Migration and the UN Refugee Agency. The update is based on interviews with the survivors, just four passengers who were rescued and arrived in Italy last night. The initial count of missing persons had been around 110. Reporter Josephine McKenna told me that migrant crossings show no sign of slowing down on the Mediterranean route, despite freezing winter weather.
On the weekend, there was a massive search and rescue operation, but it seems that almost 180 people may have died. They're at least missing, and there's no sign of them after several days, and so hopes are very grim for finding them. So that is a tragedy of extraordinary proportions, and only four survivors, two Eritreans and two Ethiopians. They've been taken to the Sicilian port of Trapani, and they've been described as quite traumatized and exhausted, as you can imagine.
Were they able to describe what happened?
Yes, it seems that this wooden boat left Libya on Friday with more than 170, maybe 180 people packed on board. All of them are believed to have originally come from East Africa. And after several days at sea, the engine cut out and the boat seemed to take on water. And as it began to sink, more and more of the people were simply submerged beneath the water. Very difficult conditions, high waves, strong winds and very cold winter temperatures. And one of the survivors even said he tried desperately to find his wife and had been very unsuccessful. It's really a terrible tragedy. It happened only 30 nautical miles off the Libyan coast, and there's been a massive search operation over the last few days to try and find survivors, but it looks very grim at this point.
Well, it just appears that migrant crossings show no sign of slowing down. When you compare it to migrant crossings last year, it appears they're even more crossings this year in 2017, making that treacherous journey across the Mediterranean.
We are seeing a trend of much higher departures this year. 2,300 migrants have been registered in Italy just since the beginning of the year, and that is much higher than last year. As you might recall, we had 181,000 people arrive in Italian ports in 2016, and there's concern now that this number is going to increase into 2017, particularly because we're in January and in the winter months the numbers usually drop off. But certainly we're seeing a very strong flow of migrants and refugees making that very dangerous journey in very difficult conditions.
What is the Italian government saying about this at this time?
Well, the Italian government's very concerned about the increased numbers. The Interior Minister, as we know, Marco Minniti, has been in Libya just last week trying to put in place a new agreement to stop people smuggling, to stop illegal immigration, working with the Libyan government. But the Libyan situation is very unstable. There still seems to be lawlessness in certain parts of the country and great division. That seems a very optimistic hope at this point that we're going to be able to slow down that flow. And there are reports that there are thousands of people in Libya waiting to make that crossing. So the Italian government's very concerned and trying to put in place greater monitoring and greater registration of migrants once they arrive in Italy so that they can keep track of the people who are coming in.
And another aspect to this story, I understand you have an update on the situation regarding the people smugglers' capture.
Yes, an Italian lawmaker has launched a parliamentary inquiry into what is believed to have been a question of mistaken identity, a British-Italian operation that led to the arrest of whom they thought was Medani Yedego Mered, a 35-year-old, considered to be a key player in the smuggling of thousands of immigrants and refugees from North Africa to Europe. And after this man was extradited from Sudan to Italy to face prosecution, it seems that there are now reports suggesting that he is in fact the wrong man, that he is in fact Medani Tesfarmariam Berhe, an Eritrean refugee with no connection to this people smuggling business. There's been a lot of controversy about this case, and as the court hearing is continuing in Sicily, an MP, Erasmo Palazzotto, said that he was going to begin a parliamentary inquiry to bring it to national attention across Italy and try and accelerate this process of finding out who this man really is and whether it is in fact a case of mistaken identity.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Venice. Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Burundi's opposition in exile says the security situation in the country may deteriorate soon. The announcement follows the failure of a major opposition group to attend a national dialogue with the government today in Arusha. Moses Habyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The inter-Burundi dialogue consultations resumed yesterday in Arusha, Tanzania, in an effort to bring an end to the current political crisis in Burundi. but an important umbrella body of the opposition was not invited. SENARED, or the National Council for the Respect of Arusha Accord. That agreement brought peace to the country nearly two decades ago. The group says President Pierre Nkurunziza violated the accord last year when he ran for a re-election, which opponents say was unconstitutional. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa is the facilitator of the regional mediated dialogue. In December, he said those who were accused of plotting the failed coup in 2015 will not participate in the dialogue. Jeremiah Minani is the Belgium-based communication officer for SENARED.
SENARED is pushing for a new facilitation. We've been in touch with the United Nations, African Union, and also with the East Africa community. We've been in touch with President Museveni. We are trying to push for a new facilitator. This negotiation must happen and must happen now. They cannot be led by a man who's supporting Nkurunziza regime.
Some opposition leaders who are also part of SENARED were invited but never showed up in the first inter-Burundi dialogue consultations this year. Agathon Rwasa, a Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the National Assembly, was also among those invited to attend the consultations in Arusha. He slammed the opposition leaders who boycotted the talks.
Personally, I think there is no use from any side to boycott the process. Whatever the anger one could have with regard to the so-called speech of Mkapa in Bujumbura last time, I think what is important is the national interest than these angers of each and every one.
For more than a year now, since the regional mediated dialogue started, there has been no fruitful outcome from the talks. Agathon Rwasa says tolerance could be the key to end the Burundi crisis.
You know, there has never been a debate between the opponents around the table. I cannot predict the failure or the success. All what is needed is to see that there is, at a certain point of time, an engagement between the protagonists. Then we will appreciate accordingly.
Jeremiah Minani of SENARED responds.
We're going to have to resolve this crisis as soon as possible. Let me tell you, if this doesn't happen sooner, I can tell you in the next 3-4 months, you're going to have to see the deterioration of the situation on the ground. Because, like I said, SENARED is running out arguments to convince those opposed to Nkurunziza to not use force.
Since last year, mass protests have died down. However, targeted assassinations have continued to rock the country, with the recent victim being the Burundi Minister of Environment, who was shot dead in the New Year's Eve. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Zambia, Malawi, and Zimbabwe are urging farmers to act fast with pesticides to halt the spread of armyworms now threatening crops in all three countries. Lamek Messina has the latest from Blantyre in southern Malawi.
The worms have so far destroyed thousands of hectares of maize crops in Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Malawi, all countries where maize is a staple food. Armyworms are a common pest, but this year's invasion has sparked particular concern. El Nino-induced drought and flooding destroyed much of the previous two harvests, leaving nearly 30 million people in the region in need of food assistance. Chimimba David Pires is the coordinator for the UN Food and Agriculture Organization for Southern Africa.
The problem is that if you have had, like we have had here in Southern Africa, two droughts, that is the conducive environment for the armyworm to be very active when the rains come.
Malawi first reported the armyworms at the start of January in 8 of the country's 28 districts. Now officials say the worms have spread across the country. Erika Maganga is the principal secretary in the Ministry of Agriculture in Malawi.
In most parts, people are reporting of some incidences of some sort. Like yesterday, there was a report from Salima. In Kasungu, they have reported, you know.
She says efforts are underway to contain the worms.
It's a pest that comes almost every season. So we always pre-position pesticides in all the ADDs. We are giving out cypermethrin to farmers that whose gardens have been affected.
Maganga says owners of big farms are advised to buy the pesticides from agro-based dealers. Rose Chisoa, a farmer outside Malawi's capital, Lilongwe, told VOA that she has almost managed to control the worms which invaded her rice field.
I noted about the armyworms earlier. Actually, I noted that on my rice while it was on the nursery. So I bought some pesticides. I sprayed cypermethrin and it worked.
Zimbabwe is reporting the armyworms in 7 of the country's 8 corn-growing provinces, but it is Zambia that has been hardest hit. The country first registered the invasion of the worms last month in 4 provinces, Copper Belt, Central, Eastern, and Lusaka. Zambia has been using military planes to spray the pesticides to highly affected areas. Local media reports say the worms have so far destroyed 124,000 hectares of maize crops in Zambia, up from nearly 90,000 hectares last week. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
An initiative seeks to empower girls in Kenya's shanty towns by teaching them to use technology to solve local challenges. Business skills and design are some of the courses taught. Lenny Ruvaga has the story from Nairobi.
24-year-old Minzelet Ejai takes her students through the paces and film production. We are in Kibera, an informal settlement, low-income area on the outskirts of Nairobi. Today's lesson is on directing and script writing.
Action, move.
Ejai is a tutor at Tech Dada. In Swahili, Dada means sister. Formed 2 years ago, Tech Dada teaches girls in informal settlements business and technology skills. Ejai is a graduate of the 3-month program who now works there as a mentor.
The challenges that I face personally when I'm training these young girls is that most of them see these film directing as a male thing, not as ladies who can direct films. So I have to work hard to make sure that they're interested and then spread the knowledge to them.
University wasn't in the cards for Elizabeth Ochieng. She couldn't afford it. But through Tech Dada, she learned about web design and 3D printing and now has a job teaching graphic design at a local school. She hopes the skills gained here will lead to self-employment for her students once they finish high school. But the program isn't without its challenges.
We lack materials, computers, we don't have adequate computers. And also, maybe some students can't attend the classes, like they have some responsibilities at home. So we need maybe parents to fully support us so that we can help the girls grow.
Josephine Meliza is the founder of Tech Dada, which is funded by the Tuna Panda Institute.
There is really great potential in the informal settlements. We look around, we see how people are able to turn challenges into opportunities, and sometimes it's just the lack of opportunities that makes people resort to crime. So for us, when we look at this as an opportunity to create better mothers for the society, to create women leaders who will be able to become change makers in the society.
Around 100 girls have benefited from the initiative since its inception. Meliza says 85% of them have been able to secure formal employment. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Friday, January 20th, the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, will be sworn into office. VOA will be there and will broadcast the presidential inauguration live from 1600 UTC to 1800 UTC to audiences around the world. Tune in as we begin the next chapter in American history, right here on VOA.